Hold on a second.
Okay. Do 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 do.
Hi, and thanks for calling the We Did It hotline. For a good time, please visit 1-844-WeDidIt.com. See you soon.
Ah, what the fuck?
I wish. Hey, LaRue.
And the LaRue one, they had like a, you could leave a
Hi.
Chip. Fuck, hold on.
And thanks for cooling the weed.
In the other one, in the LaRue video, you could leave a cheeky message.
Oh, wow. Oh, well.
You could still leave a cheeky message.
Yeah, Adam, leave a cheeky message.
Well, hello everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to another edition of the Music Video Land podcast, brought to you by your super good friends at imvdb.com, the Internet Music Video Database. My name is Adam, do stuff for IMVDB, such as the code and the data, and with me as usual is Mr. Doug Klinger, soon to be New York Doug Klinger, but currently Pompano Beach Doug Klinger. How are you, Doug?
Doing super good. Getting all the shitty parts of Pompano Beach while I'm still here. So spending time with lots of alphas.
There's a lot of Paneras there.
All the Panera breads getting visited.
Make sure you hit every single one of them. And in a place where there are no Paneras, that's the city motto in Sudbury, Ontario, is Mr. Adam Alexander from Fringe Music Fix. Adam, how are you?
I'm not dead yet.
Oh boy, that's a solid connection right there. I think he said he's not dead yet. We're not quite sure about that. but we have with us on the podcast two guests who we wanted to have on the podcast for a long time. Ali Avital Sippin and Owen Donovan, better known, I think, as part of the group Bangs. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
And this is a good time to talk to you guys because we're recording this on Thursday, September 18th, and this past Tuesday you released a fantastic video for Classic by The Knox featuring Powers, which we're going to talk about. But I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Bangs and what kind of brought you guys together to work as collaborators and what you guys do.
Well, we're Bangs. how did it all start? It was kind of a serendipitous beginning. We, Owen and I met through a friend, and then, you know, we just had a coffee, and then we found out about, that Genero, the music video contest, and we made our first video ever for School of Seven Bells together, and it was Owen was shooting it. He's a cinematographer. I was directing, and then we had Stephen Grise production designing, and we made this video for School of Seven Bells. And we had never really officially made a music video before. I had never really directed a video that had like seen the light of day, except for like friends' bands. And we made this video for this contest, and it won. And that was kind of the beginning of everything. It was like, you know, we went from having, you know, run around the streets of Brooklyn shooting it with literally the whole video cost us $10 to make. And that whole $10 went to
lunch.
It was lunch and like, yeah. and candy for the girl, to the little girl in the video to keep her awake.
Yeah. Yeah. Sugar rush.
Yeah.
Where did you guys get lunch for $10?
I don't think lunch was included in the $10.
Was it ramen? Or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. It's like a Hot Pockets all around. That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
You can get a lot of Hot Pockets for $10.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the first, you know, real music video that we made. We had all come from kind of different backgrounds. And that was just kind of how it started. And since then, we've been inseparable.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those things. It was like, yeah, we're pretty good at this. Maybe we should do it again. And then again and again and again. And yeah, here we are, like, what, 2.5 years later.
Then, yeah. I guess so.
And in
your budget's gotten bigger than $10?
Barely.
So slowly but surely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone, we can all get pizza now on set.
Sweet. But is it $1 pizza or $3 pizza?
Extravagant.
Yeah. I mean, I think back then we had fantasies of what doing music videos for big bands look like, or bigger bands. It's been interesting really learning the music industry, kind of, you know, and having some of those fantasies get, you know, broken down.
Or just push further down the road.
Yeah.
I'm curious what some of those fantasies are that have been pushed down.
7-foot monitors.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I really knew the musician side of it before we really got into this stuff. I think I always thought the musicians had money, the artists, you know, the visual people didn't. And I'm kind of starting to understand more how it works, how labels work, how managers work. And also, like, just how every video is really different. There is no, you know, there is no, like, fantasy world in which you show up, you know, wearing your, like, you know, dark rimmed glasses and get to just order everyone around. That, you know, there's a lot of compromises always involved. And when you're lucky, you get to feel like you have the dream job. But then, you know, in between all those moments is a lot of like psychological therapy that you're providing for other people.
Well, we want to talk about a few videos, but I guess we should start with the most recent one, which is, like I mentioned before, Classic by The Knox featuring Powers. And if anybody wants to see this video, they can go to the show notes, imvdb.com/podcast, this is episode 124. And I guess the first thing I want to know about this video is where you found these women, because if you haven't seen the video, it features, I guess, maybe 5 or 6 of them that are sort of the main characters in this, and they all have really distinct look, not just style looks to them, but kind of just, you know, visual looks to them, I guess.
Well, I'm a really big fan of Backstage.com, which is a casting website, in a way that's, like, almost a little bit creepy. So when I have an idea like this, and I know, you know, I know what I'm looking for. Like, in this case, I was like, I want girls with big eyes, who, I mean, it's almost like I can't put into words. I just knew exactly what I was looking for. And I literally must have looked at, like, maybe, I don't know, like, somewhere between, like, 10 and 20,000 pictures of people before I settled on. I mean, I only cast, I think, 3 of them were brand new, were from the website, and then 3 of them were girls we've worked with before who, you know, even as I was pitching the treatment, as we were writing the treatment, we knew that those girls were already going to be in it, and we were ready to schedule around them because they were, the casting in this case was what was going to make or break it and, like, be the selling point, I think, of the concept.
It's funny that Adam Alexander spends a lot of time on Backstage.com as well, but totally different reasons. Adam Alexander is totally into Backstage.com. Bringing Adam back in the fold. I did want to, Ali, you helped out at OMG Everywhere this past summer, and last summer the Knox were there helping out. And
really?
Yeah, they were one of the bands that came and they made a music video with the kids. And is it true that there's kind of like a OMG connection in how this video was made? Is it true that, like, Austin Peters technically commissioned this video?
Yeah, and I didn't know until we were already working on it, or maybe even after we had, or maybe right before we shot it, I found out, and I'm super grateful because I'm a big Austin Peters fan.
Can you say, is it kind of he just, like, connected you guys together, or how'd that work out?
Yeah, he's friends with Ben from the band, or maybe both of them. And I guess they were looking for treatments, and he just gave them our name. And I believe we pitched against other directors, but, you know, they liked. It seemed like our treatment was exactly what they were looking for in the first place. So it was a really good match, and you know, we've become friends since then. And you know, I've been Ben from the band and I are just constantly texting and, you know, comparing notes about all the shitty comments that are on the YouTube page.
That's something that I've always been really interested in, especially with YouTube, because music videos kind of live on YouTube, you know, and YouTube is popularly known as a place where there's so many shitty comments. And, you know, to kind of bring this into another question I had about the kind of visual influences of this, I've heard a lot of people mentioned The Sims in conjunction with this. Was that something that you guys had even kind of brought in as an influence, or was there something else?
I think The Sims was something we had definitely talked about, but it wasn't like the driving force. We were also looking at like a lot of, what was the name of that? The Hitman?
Yeah, I mean, some people on YouTube picked up on it. Hitman Go, which is like a game that I guess people know about.
A tablet game where you like garrote people and throw them off roofs and things. But we were actually both a little surprised that The Sims led on the headline.
For BuzzFeed,
But I do. It's in there, but it's
There was some references. I mean, when in the treatment we had Sims characters, like images of Sims characters, but not so much the set. And I'm surprised that people kind of like sunk their teeth. I mean, I think in general, when you're dealing with like the BuzzFeed crowd, it's like you need to be like, oh, this is just like something else, you know, in order for people to kind of relate to it or respond to it. But honestly, I've never played Sims in my life. When I was a kid, it was something that like the cool kid, because my parents are immigrants, so I like grew up with like weird Russian movies and like didn't really get to like do the cool things other kids were doing. So in my mind, Sims is like something to aspire to, you know. It was like what like the cool kids were doing that I like didn't really know what it was, you know.
I can assure you that I was playing Sims and I was not the cool kid.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's the first person I've heard that's like, man, if I could only get to the Sims level of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think in this case, honestly, like the kind of ethos of the video came from other stuff that Owen and I have done in the past, and even before that, some of like my weird performance artwork that I was directing before I got into music videos. And Laura Murphy, who is the blonde that kind of appears in the video a bunch, her and I have been working on that character in a number of different like weird, obscure little videos that we made together for a long time. And she's been kind of my muse for a while. So when I heard the song right away, I just like pictured like this kind of movement and like facial tick thing that, you know, Laura and I had developed for a long time and felt like it would be really perfect. And then the concept kind of expanded from that. So I would say she actually was a really big part of just her face and like her character and her acting skills. It stemmed from that rather than the other way around.
Yeah, because she's the, when I was watching it, I was like, seems like she's done this before. I don't know. She seems like she's like, she has like this down pad. She was really rocking it. Yeah.
When she got in front of the camera, like all I could say was like, all right, Laura, do your thing.
And then there's the other, there's the woman with the, no pun intended, bangs, who is licking the lollipop, which is one of my favorite shots.
Yeah, we've actually worked with her as well. And she was in a video we did. It was one of our first videos we did for a band called Clementine and the Galaxy. And it was for a song called Robot. And we had these kind of like android girls. There's three of them. And she was one of them. So we also knew that she could pull this off really well. And she's got a really, really cool expressions that she makes and
there's something unsettling about that lizard, the lizard tongue.
Yeah, the lizard.
is that an actual, like, is she actually doing that, or did you guys repeat the footage?
She's totally doing that. Yeah, everything is real. I don't think we really, we did that much.
The fake pool.
Well, the pool is fake.
Everything else is, it's there. It's on camera,
I love the pool. That was one of my favorite little subtleties.
So I wonder if you guys could talk a little bit about the kind of set that was built for this video. So it's completely practical other than the fake water?
Yeah, everything is practical, right? More or less. Yeah. Other than, you know, some cleanup jobs that happened, but yeah, it was it was actually built. I mean, I think because we've started out working on such low budgets and all of that, we kind of out of necessity had to do. We're really into certain, you know, referring to digital culture, but when you don't actually have the luxury to, you know, use a CGI artist, you kind of have to do everything in a different way, which is why I think historically we've had actors pretending to be GIFs, which we did in our Pains of Being Pure at Heart video. And, you know, even before that, I think this kind of like having humans act as if they are computers is something that's kind of a direction that we want to continue exploring. But it would also, you know, but it was also cool for once to actually work with the real CGI company and have that pool in there. That was something that was a first for us.
It was also nice to have it as like an additive rather than something that like the story centers around or anything like that, which would, I think would be in a certain way hard, probably difficult for us to do something like that because it would be so foreign at this point.
Yeah. We're not really like, we haven't yet conceptualized around, you know, having that kind of luxury of like, well, we could actually do anything. You know, it's usually like, well, we know we can build the set. We know that we can, you know, get these actresses, and then you kind of go from there.
And I'm curious what kind of direction you were giving. Krista Rue, is that her name from Powers? What kind of performance direction you were giving her? You talked about people like robots. Is that kind of part of what you were telling her to kind of think about when she was performing?
No, I wasn't, to be honest. I wasn't really sure when we got on set how I was going to direct her. I was going to just feel it out because I knew exactly what I wanted from the girls, but I wasn't sure with her because I had never met her. I had met all the girls prior. I had had coffee with all the girls that I hadn't worked with before. So I had kind of talked to them about every detail of their performance. With her, I hadn't met her, so I wanted to sort of feel it out. And then as soon as she started singing the song, I decided to just kind of go with a more natural thing to offset how kind of computerized or, you know, digital, artificial, plastic the other girls were. And I think it worked now, looking back on it. I think it was nice to have her be a little bit more relatable, just to kind of almost as like a doorway into this world, which is, you know, feels like slightly surreal.
And then, Owen, for shooting this, was there any particular, I know you, did you guys have colors for this video that you worked with, or is all the color in camera?
Well, no, actually, well, I was essentially the colorist in the video, me and Allie kind of sitting in the room doing it. But it was actually we shot in S-Log on a Sony FS700, and basically you're shooting it looks like how it would have looked on set, but you shoot a flat image to get more information and color, and then you can bring it out later. I think more of the challenges came from actually within our budget kind of achieving the look that we needed. And especially on the wide shot, shooting like 240 frames a second on some of this stuff and having like five lights, six or seven lights. So you got to kind of put lights on double duty or work a little magic with that kind of thing. But I don't think there's anything though particularly taxing as compared to some of our other videos.
And actually, while we have you guys on the podcast, we a few months ago we put comments on all our videos, and 99% of the comments are that people asking us questions about information we don't have, and it just so happens that this video has a question on it from Loverboy 666. And it says, "Great music video. Who directed the art?" And I suppose they're asking if there was an art director on this music video, and was there?
Oh yeah, I think it's in the credits. The production designer was Emma Rose Mead. And she was she, you know, she was overseeing all of the set building, every single prop, all the cocktails, which were like solid. Actually so impeccably made. I feel like you can't even tell how, because they're solid.
Yeah.
They're like, they were made of like basically like Jell-O, but with like some thickening added to make it almost so it's just like resin, you know. And then there was like, and then she had made, so they were like colorful Jell-O, and then she had separately made clear ice cubes out of that same Jell-O to have inside the drink to make it solid. It was very it was like just those cocktails was like a whole project in itself.
Well, Loverboy 666, and boy is spelled B-O-I, by the way, in case anybody was wondering.
Question. in case we want to text him.
Exactly, yeah. I'll ask him what his number is so you guys can text back and forth, just like...
He's me.
Yeah, Adam has an account to add directly to the site, but instead he is asking questions as Loverboy 666. That's just how that's how we recommend people add to the site, make up a name, and ask us questions via the comments. and then, so I also wanted to. I really love the Murmurs by 100 Waters video, and which came out in June over the summer. And I wanted to ask if that, you know, you mentioned kind of having humans act like computer programs or video games, kind of. It's in this video, there are, you know, a lot of people who are dressed as construction workers, and they kind of move in kind of random patterns in big groups. Is that the same idea of you know, having people move in like this kind of unnatural way? It's kind of mesmerizing in a way.
I think conceptually it's actually very different, because with the classic video, it was really about taking certain tropes, you know, certain summer. Music video image like tropes, and like the idea of like what's a classic summer video, and then kind of subverting it or you know, turning it on its head a little bit, and ultimately kind of formally making a statement about it. You know, it was about that, like the ideas itself, everything we were going off of was, you know, this kind of the kind of classic image of like how a girl should behave in the summer, which like is supposed to be kind of the funny aspect of that. Whereas with 100 Waters, I think the process conceptually and just, you know, everything we were thinking was a lot more like genuine from the heart, from the song, if that makes sense. You know, it wasn't so much of like a statement about digital culture or a statement about something. It was like based on, you know, conversations with Nicole, the, you know, the lead singer of the band, and also just, you know, visions and images that we had from the song. It was meant more to be like a mythology that we were creating based on everything we knew.
And I also really wanted to talk about a video that we talked a lot about on the podcast in 2003, a year ago now. Jeez. So Free, Sex Free. Some a band name that I'm going to butcher. Actually, Adam, you speak French. Tell us the band name here.
It's Autre Neveu.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's good.
Owen, did you shoot this video too?
Yeah.
And we do not have that in the credits. Damn, we suck. But if anybody hasn't seen this video, this is a video that we were just kind of like fascinated by last year, because it is a single shot video set in this ballroom, with these sort of choreographed movements of people. And if you haven't seen it, stop the podcast right now and go check it out, because it's one of our favorite videos. And I remember Adam Alexander having a theory about what actually this meant. I mean, the actual story in this video was, and I was wondering if we get, Adam, do you remember what your theory was?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a play with gender stereotypes and kind of how the females are portraying like a typical female in like a courting kind of a thing, and the men are all walking around real macho, but then the front man is kind of in a gray area between genders. That was sort of my theory, and then I, yeah, something like that.
I think you, I mean, I think you got it.
Oh, sweet.
that one's a tough one to talk about, I think, because it is one of those things that it almost to me feels like a sculpture or something, you know. It's like, we made it, we put it out in the world, and I'm not sure that I'm ready to, I don't know that I'll ever really be ready to like go into what it all means. Cause I like that it exists on its own terms, and that, like, you know, one of my favorite comments on that one on YouTube is I'd rather watch a bird sleeping than this. It's like amazing. You definitely tapped into, for sure.
I'm very impressed by that, Adam. Way to go, Adam Alexander.
Yeah, good job.
The way you kind of nestled in those little Easter eggs in your videos too, like the album cover is kind of framed in the back. I love those little nuggets.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that was, if you check out the Otro Nouveau's album cover for Anxiety, it just has these two art handlers, you know, with white gloves holding these frames, these empty frames, or just one empty frame rather. And that was the starting point for the video. So the video is, you know, an expansion of this simple image that set kind of tells a whole story with just, you know, this kind of formal composition of these simple elements. And the video is basically that, in a way, come to life.
And you mentioned the kind of budget aspect of videos, or maybe the dream of a certain kind of environment for making videos that hasn't been quite realized yet. And when I see this video, I see like something that's like kind of like a very large scale production. How did you guys pull that together for this video?
That one was honestly like, I still don't really know. I mean, because it wasn't a very big budget at all.
A lot of volunteer time.
And, you know, we had an amazing producer for that one named Julia Simpson, who, I mean, she really, really brought it all together. It's literally, you know, walking into that banquet hall where we shot it and, like, you know, two girls going into the office of this like old Greek man who's been running that place. I mean, it's what's that place called? Grand Prospect Hall, where we shot it in Brooklyn. You know, they have weddings and stuff, but they've been around for as long as, I mean, like Fred and Ginger Astaire have like danced in there, and Woody Allen has shot in there. I mean, it's just like an amazing place. And it literally came down to me and Julia going into this old man's office, which is just like filled with like 300 amazing sculptures. It's like the craziest place. And just sitting there and like with tears in our eyes, like begging him to let us use it for the amount of money that we had. And him just feeling sorry for us, you know, it was like things like that. And then a lot of volunteer time. I mean, you know, we've been really fortunate to have very loyal crew, mm-hmm. and cast members who keep coming back to work with us because they believe in what we're doing, and they also trust that one day maybe we'll make millions of dollars and be able to pay them all. But you know, but a big part of it is I think we really have fun. I mean, that shoot, there was I think like 95 people on set, and we had exactly 10 hours to shoot it, and It was definitely one of the most intense, and I don't even remember it because it was just like being caught in like a whirlwind of, I was standing on the stage of that space with a microphone, just like counting off beats, like a one and two and three and four, and you know, and having everyone move to them. And we had 10 hours, and it was one of those things where it's you go 5 minutes over and you're charged an extra $1,000 and it comes out of your, you know, your bank account that doesn't even have that much in it. You know, so it's like, it was the stress levels of something like that were really, I don't know at this point if we can quite go back to spreading ourselves that thin, because it takes a lot out of you. It takes a lot out of your collaborators. It's, you're asking a lot to, to be like, you know, to make a production of that scale.
When
you really should just for that budget be shooting, you know, two people on a white psych, you know?
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, it's hard to know sometimes. It's like, it's one thing to be able to wear yourself thin.
Yeah.
You know, and it's another thing to ask that of somebody else. And it's like, or you just
be five people.
Yeah. Yeah, you present them the option, and oftentimes you're like, yeah, I'm there, let's do it.
But at the same time, I think experiences like that have also, you know, now that the budgets are getting a little bit bigger, I think we learned so much from working in conditions like that. Not that those were bad conditions, but, you know, just in terms of kind of the labor that went into it with all of the people we work with, that now we are super resourceful. Like, we've gotten better at being really resourceful and just being smart about what's realistic, you know, without having, you know, and having people still be happy at the end of the day, you know.
That's one of the most stressful situations I can think of, where you have close to 100 people there, and then if you go over a certain time, money's gonna be taken out of your bank account.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. And everyone's wearing like ball gowns and stuff. It's like, it was the weirdest. I mean, and it's the fanciest place I've ever been to. I mean, we felt like we were like Cinderella's running around in there, you know. It's like, even just the bathrooms, everything is gilded, you know, and meanwhile we're like, our lunch literally was pizza in the parking lot because we weren't allowed to have food there. So we were all these just like starving artists and actors, and everyone's gowns. Wearing tuxes and ball gowns and just wolfing down cold pizza in the parking lot and then running back in there and like doing this weird performance. You know, it was so weird.
That's a music video life. If you, like we mentioned, we're going to have all the links on imvdb.com/podcast, where you can check out the Ego Free Sex Free video, as well as many others. And, you know, besides those videos, we have a few other videos to talk about this week, because every week on the podcast, we talk about the music videos that have come out this week, some of the popular ones and some of the cool ones. Yeah, sometimes if there's a Venn diagram, sometimes those circles like come together and sometimes they don't.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Right, on occasion. Let's start with one of the cool ones. And since we already said his name once, let's start with the music video that Austin Peters directed this week. How about it? Everyone on board with that? Everyone needs to agree on the direction of this podcast.
Yeah, but full disclosure, you just hung out with Austin in New York. So this is sort of like one of those you're recommending a product, but you're also on the board kind of thing.
I'm on the board of Austin Peters. That's cool. I particularly wanted to talk about this video though, because it bears a lot of resemblance to a video that we talked about last week. And I think that's super interesting. Maybe I'm an idiot.
Are you talking about the, fuck you. Here's the title. Fuck You All the Time, which is a remix by Shlomo and Jeremiah. Yeah.
Right, I am talking about the Fuck You All The Time remix video by Shlomo and Jeremiah. The concept of this video is a phone sex line, and last week we talked about a LaRue video called, it has a name that someone remembers. Kiss and Not Tell by LaRue, and that also is phone sex related, and so that's fun. To talk about another similarity is that there's the phone number in the Shlomo and Jeremiah video can be called, and you can hear a song, and you can hear that right now.
Should we call it?
We could call or just pause for edit.
Okay. Does anybody know what we did it in number terms is?
Hold on. It's 1-844-944-9-9-3-3-1-3-1-8.
Okay.
Here we go.
Let's give it a shot. This is podcast life. There we go. Last time we tried to call the LaRue line with everybody in the line, but we couldn't get through. We had to call later. Come on.
Do And we'll play it later. So that was fun, guys. That was a great song. We all loved it. Here's why, another reason why I wanted to bring this up. I think I like this video better than the LaRue video because it has a second level to it, right? The LaRue video is kind of just one thing, and that is the phone sex line. And this video kind of goes somewhere. Adam Fairholme, how do you feel about that?
I agree because what you're alluding to, the area where it goes, is the person calling the sex phone line, which are performers in the video. So you actually like get both sides. At one point, they're performing a verse on the phone, like in a bridge, I guess, calling a sex phone line. I wouldn't advise calling a sex phone line in public, but I guess for these guys, that's just what you do. But yeah, no, I did enjoy this video. It's got it's kind of got an interesting angle to it. The LaRue one was a little bit more tongue-in-cheek. It was a little more innocent. This one's a little bit more... Well, the fuck you is in the title.
It's
so
a bit sexier, I think.
It's a bit sexier, yeah.
Adam Alexander was excited by this video. You were excited by this video?
A bit more excited than the LaRue video.
Okay, cool. Now we know your type.
I have to say I was also excited by the video.
Okay, so we have two for excited. Owen?
I dug it. I dug it.
Okay, but were you excited?
In what sense?
Oh man,
yeah, I mean, that's gonna ask. What kind of excited?
You take that.
If you have to ask, you weren't excited.
No, I think it was like I think that it was legitimately a really sexy video, and that was my like my first instinctual reaction to it. I was like, that is so much sexier than I know we haven't gotten to this yet, but like. For example, the new booty video that just dropped. There's something weirdly restrained about it, even though it doesn't seem like it's that restrained. But I think the energy of it is restrained in Austin's video.
I like that you said the booty video that just dropped because that's what you do with booties typically.
That's a good point.
Drop them.
Well, I really want to talk about that, and yeah, "Fuck You All the Time" remix is a great video.
I highly recommend it. Totally,
Austin Peters, directed by Austin Peters and Sus Boy,
who I think did the animation.
Did the animation, yeah, because there's a fair amount of animation in this video, a little bit of throwback animation. But I do really want to talk about the booty video because this is so. Whoever watched the MTV VMAs this year, just maybe a month ago, I show, Jennifer Lopez was on the red carpet and she was being interviewed. And she said that she, like the next day, she was going to go shoot this video for a new single called Booty with Iggy Azalea. And it was supposed to come out, I think, a few weeks ago, right? This video has been kind of on the, it's been on the block for a while.
There was a teaser, right? 2 weeks ago, they released a teaser, and the teaser was released. It was in some places with a September 9th release date for this video, and here it is, the 18th. It finally came out, 9 p.m.
Like the teaser, probably.
Liars is what they are. So anyway, Adam Fairholme, I think you described this video as Jennifer Lopez's midlife crisis. Who else agrees with that? I do.
It was the thing that we didn't want to say, but you said it, so there you go.
All right, you guys didn't say it. If anyone gets quoted, it'll be Adam Alexander through me. So it'll be a weird quote as it is. You guys won't be tied to it. But I'm glad you agree. Adam Alexander, however, I think has a different take on this video. We should mention Hype Williams. I don't know if we have or haven't. Is the director Adam Alexander enjoyed this video?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I did enjoy the video.
Okay, explain yourself.
For what it was, I think I'm just a big Iggy Azalea fan. I think that anything she releases, I'll probably like.
That's a terrible justification. I was ready for some kind of like some substance. You usually have a real reason for liking a video, just because you heart Iggy Azalea is not a reason.
No, I think that is the exact reason why you should not like this video, because Iggy Azalea. This is the first music video that I've seen in a very, very long time where the featured artist looks visibly uncomfortable. If this was like a kidnapping,
yeah, that's true.
If this was a kidnapping video, we would see it like
maybe she was.
I think she would.
No, she is.
She's blinking in Morse code. Please help me.
So true. It's so perfect. Yeah.
Because Iggy Azalea, when it comes down to it, is not Nicki Minaj has made a career out of, like, with the Anaconda video, is unabashedly gonna go in that direction with being, you know, showing her butt or whatever and making a kind of a gimmick out of that. But I think the kind of misunderstanding that whoever is managing Iggy Azalea's career, or maybe her herself, has made is that her career or whatever is about her, like, sexuality or her body or whatever. She just seems she seems really super uncomfortable. I feel like Iggy Azalea thinks that this is what she kind of has to do, and it's mixed at the perfect time with Jennifer Lopez
also thinking that this is what she has to do.
Yeah, also thinking, right. Like, desperately trying to get back into the frame. It is so true. There's a moment in the video where she looks at the screen and says, like,
get help.
What does she say? I can't remember.
Get help.
You're right. Get help.
But it is just so transparently like, help me, I have no clue what I'm doing, and also help me, I signed on to this, I didn't really know what it was, that it's right. Just so painful.
And she is actually tacked on to this song. This song on the album is featuring Pitbull, and I swear to God. And then they made the video, and they're like, "Wait, Pitbull doesn't have a butt like this. We need to find one." And they're like, "Wait, all the kids love Iggy Azalea. Put her in my video." I was just doing a Jennifer Lopez impression when I was saying that because that's what she wanted. So Iggy Azalea definitely has done some risky things in her.
That's what I wanted to say. So I mean, the booty dropping's been happening with Iggy since like her old videos. Like she's always been doing,
but not like this. It was kind of like within a context or kind of within a larger picture. Like I don't see the picture here. Like this is just.
It's like, not like Scott Sweeney. Right.
This is just like shots from like waist down of butts. Like it really is like it's pretty close to a softcore porn. She even smokes
cigarettes. Exactly. There's something I think about this like new girl on girl trend. I mean, I think Shakira and Rihanna did something similar. It wasn't quite as graphic, but it was also like the whole premise of the video was just like the two of them being sexy, like kind of with each other and with the wall, you know?
that video is I Can't Remember to Forget You, directed by Joseph Kahn, just PS.
Yes.
Our listeners, not you, sorry.
But then with this one, it's like kind of like that, but then it's taking it to the next level. And I don't know. I feel like I have a fantasy, like I have some fantasy that if we keep going in this direction, we'll hit the ultimate of like just the ultimate, like, okay, music videos equals porn. And then we'll have no direction to go but back. And then people will just start making like slow Tarkovsky films for music videos.
Hopefully.
In some utopian world, like that's where we'll go. We'll hit that. I mean, how much further can we really go than Anaconda and then this video? We're hitting that. We're hitting that maximum, I think, more or less.
They said that in like Robert Palmer videos, you know, when those came out. And it's just the less clothes you're wearing, there's less places to hide creativity in your video. Like there's I don't know. Yeah, it is what it is.
Well, it just how more ham. I guess I wouldn't like when I saw the Anaconda video. I guess I never could have imagined myself like 2 weeks later, like upholding it as like a standard for anything. But just hype. I don't know how Hype Williams like ham fisted this. There's a moment in the video toward the end where she's sort of or Jennifer Lopez is sort of. In this kind of whatever oil or whatever, and she's rolling around, and then at the complete worst time you can think of, there's a product placement for the EOS lip.
No, wait, that's the best time because that stuff gives you moisture in the same way that the Vaseline that she's covered gives you moisture. I mean, when I get dry lips, you could use Vaseline and achieve the same effect. So I thought it was perfectly placed. But you make a good point too, Adam. I'm just presenting the counter.
There's just nothing to this. It's like it reminds me of something that if anybody's seen the movie Idiocracy, and the scene where the guy is watching TV and there's shows like you know, a guy gets hit in the nuts or I think the show's called Ow My Balls. And if there was a music video channel, this video would play.
Yeah, you gotta see this movie. It's great. It's Mike's movie.
I'd like to bring Adam Alexander back to this conversation just to say I love Iggy Azalea too, Adam, and I don't think you're wrong for liking Iggy Azalea.
Like, I'm not saying this is like the crowning achievement of working videos. I'm just saying, like, I didn't hate it.
That's fine. I mean, are you comparing it better than Anaconda?
I like it better than Anaconda.
Okay.
Which I would say is arguably more graphic than this, Anaconda.
Arguably, some of the dancing is definitely more like directly referencing.
Sears catalog.
They're just bending over in this video. Maybe not. I don't know. I haven't watched it enough to judge that on those merits.
No, this is Sears catalog, and Anaconda is maybe Victoria's Secret, I guess. But this is more...
Is this Sears catalog?
This is Sears catalog level.
That's good.
Okay. You're absolutely right. Yes, it is. Maybe even like Fredericks of Hollywood is what Anaconda is. Am I like getting too weird and specific about like underwear magazines? Because I'll stop.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
But Allie and Owen, you're with us on that. You're on the Doug and Adam camp, I feel like.
The what?
Yeah.
Doug and in terms of not like this video, not in terms of... anything else that we said?
I hate Adam Alexander.
Yeah, we're a little less impressed with booty.
Oh yeah, I think Anaconda's okay. I mean, Anaconda, there's at least it's like the booty's within a context that's like well executed. You know, here it's like I don't know. I mean, maybe it's like maybe because none of you guys are ever gonna. Like, don't have to worry about, like, the crisis of being a woman in her 40s. Like, maybe I have, like, a sensitivity towards it where I'm just, like, I just, like, can like, sense that anxiety that makes a woman do that. not that I relate to it, but I can just, like, I can sense that there's, like, that's part of it. I don't know.
Well, she looks fantastic in this video, obviously.
Yeah, no, she looks totally amazing, you know.
It's very low, dark in all her shots.
I think that this one reeks of something weird. I can't, you know, and I do think it's a mix of that and then also Iggy Azalea looking a little scared. And,
the screenshot of this video looks like in the thumbnail, looks like Jennifer Lopez is like forcibly keeping Iggy Azalea in the video. It's like, stick around longer. Smells of Something Weird. Is that what you said? Because that is the podcast title or something, maybe.
Yeah, totally. It definitely smells of something weird.
Well, just think if you're Iggy Azalea, how much of a mindfuck this is. Because, like, you know, in 2011, she was like, she did a video called Pussy, which we kind of were examined as a weird object to kind of dissect in 2011, directed by Falcon, which she's since desperately tried to get off the internet. And, you know, it's just been like the last 2 years, and then all of a sudden you're sitting on a set with Hype Williams, one of the most famous music video directors of all time, and Jennifer Lopez, one of the biggest stars of all time, and Hype Williams is telling you to rub your butt against Jennifer Lopez's. What are you going to do? I do not blame Iggy Azalea one bit in this.
Well, but I think that also he's kind of gone in a direction with the last few videos where it seems like he's into kind of stripping things back. It's like he's probably seeing where we've gone in 2014 in terms of like all the crazy shit that everybody's doing. And I feel like his response to that is let's just strip it back and like, which is, you know, the Beyonce and Jay-Z Drunk in Love video is like, I think really beautiful because it really is like he was like, well, what can I do? I have this, you know, like chart topping song that's gonna, you know, that's just like gonna destroy the world. I have it. I have Beyonce, I have Jay-Z. What do I do with them? I'm gonna give them one glass of wine and put them on a beach and shoot it in black and white, which I think is actually a really smart move because he just like took it and he made it really intimate and it's like, he really kind of juiced them for everything he could, you know, whereas I think he had probably had a similar mentality in this one. He's like, okay, well, what can I do with these two women? Like, oh, I can just shoot them from the waist down and have them just like clap their butts for 4 minutes straight or whatever, you know?
That's a really good point about the Drunk in Love video though, because that's such a, and it's similar kind of, I don't know how old Beyonce is. I don't think she's in her 40s yet. I think she's maybe.
She's somewhere in between Iggy and J-Lo.
Yeah, but she's but the whole that whole album, Beyonce, which had a music video made for everyone, was one of the ideas of the album was it's all about sex with Jay-Z, basically. It's all the entire album. And then that video kind of, like, I was super not into the album, but that video has, like, a weird, like, kind of, like, chemistry between the two of them. And I don't know if that's wine. I think that's, like, Hennessy or something that Jay-Z's holding. I think he's going for Drake. Drake does the white wine. I don't know if Jay-Z does. But, yeah, it worked just so well, and I think it worked because of, you know, the chemistry between those two.
But it's also, but Beyonce's whole thing is about, you know, the fact that she's always been totally, like, scandal free, you know? I think a video like that just kind of furthers that idea of, like, she's just, you know, a loyal wife and mother, despite the fact that she's, like, incredibly hot and all of that, you know? And I think probably with this booty video, it's like, I think he's also just kind of tapping into their personalities as artists, because neither of them have the personality as artists to just be like, you know, I'm a loyal wife to my husband. You know what I mean? They've never tried to take that on. You know, they've both been like booty pussy. Yeah. so it's like if I'm Hype Williams, I'm gonna be like, okay, what are they about? How do I just like really simply illustrate that? You know, and this was the product of that.
No, that's so true.
It's a fantastic point. It's not like Hype Williams, like, you know, he puts out videos like this that, like, you see and you look at it for the first time, you're like, this is like not a good video. Hype Williams sucks now. But then, like, you know, it's a little bit different thing because then you look at Drunken Love and that becomes like an iconic video.
It becomes iconic. Yeah, I was just gonna say that. I think that's what he's trying to do. He's basically just trying to, like, play into what's already going on, and as a result, like, who knows, maybe this video will somehow be iconic in some, like, the, you know, in some world.
Well, Nicki Minaj's music video broke the Anaconda video, like, broke Vivo's record for 24 hours, so that's gonna be iconic based on those numbers. It's gonna get that, you know, it got that it beat Wrecking Ball or whatever. And so the booty's probably after that. That's why it released. So it released at 9 p.m., which is essentially UTC fluctuates, but that's essentially Friday morning. So, like, the 24-hour period is going to be all day tomorrow. And all day tomorrow, which is today if you're listening to this podcast, everyone's going to be talking about these two ladies' butts, and everyone's going to watch this video. And so they're grabbing for the views, and they're grabbing for the GIFs and the screen grabs, and they're going to get them, and people are going to watch this video. So I do think it for a different reason than why we now look at Drunken Love as iconic, this could get that popularity numbers to make it iconic. I mean, we just spent 45 minutes talking about it.
Yeah, I know. So. It's so fun. But it's almost like when those all those celebrity nude photos were hacked into a few weeks ago, whenever that was. And it was one of those things where it's like, well, I gotta go look at that. I mean, I didn't look at them for the record, but I know that I'm sure a lot of people did, just for the reason of being like, I hear they're out there, I gotta go see it. And I feel like with this video has a similar effect, where it's just gonna be a matter of like, oh, I could see both of their booties in one video. I'm like, two for one? Cool. You know?
I have to watch two separate videos to see it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know. That's too much work.
Too much cleaning.
Yeah.
I think we could move on to another. I think we should move on to another pop video.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because this video really surprised me this week. And I can't figure out if it's in a good way or a bad way, but I would like to submit it to the panel here, and that is "Don't Be Gone Too Long" by Chris Brown, featuring our favorite lady, Ariana Grande.
Directed by Chris Brown. Yeah. One thing we should mention about this video, the embed that we have on the site right now is some kind of rip. I know it looks like Vivo, but it's definitely not. It's on some weird Ariana Nader central YouTube account. This is a rip. And for the life of me, I can't find where this video actually exists as not a rip. I can't figure it out. And like this video is being talked about all over the place, but I don't know where it is for real. Chris Brown like just like put this video on a VHS tape and like threw it down the street, and now it's just ripped on YouTube all over the place. But
put on a floppy disk,
right? So that's an interesting thing. I can't tell if it's like, I don't think it's being buried. I think he just premiered it in such like a, he probably like premiered it on some startup that he's trying to start or something, and that's why nobody can find it, or like some Justin Bieber website. But like
Justin Bieber website?
No, like Justin that seems like I made that up, but like Justin Bieber has like a video startup that he invested in like for sharing videos, and I actually think that that could be where this video premiered. But I don't know for sure because can't find it. But anyway, that's why this video has such a low view count despite being like two massive pop stars involved with it.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that, because I was wondering, and I was like, this is a cool video, this is an interesting video, but it looks like shit.
yeah, that's why.
So we should mention the concept of this video is it takes place in some sort of medieval, maybe Game of Thrones-esque setting, and the thing is very simple. Ariana Grande and Chris Brown are lovers, and Chris Brown is thrown in the dungeon, and Ariana Grande is princess. And, you know, I can't remember what happens at the end of this video. I think he escapes and he
saves her because she gets captured.
Wind up kissing in a field.
Right. Kissing in a field.
They're about to live happily ever after. And then the opposing forces arrive. And then it leaves you on a cliffhanger.
Oh, shit. Cliffhanger. Shit.
That's why you don't remember what happened at the end, because it doesn't.
And Ariana Grande, despite being such a huge star right now, has a really terrible track record, I think, of doing music videos with people. I still have nightmares about Mac Miller, the Way featuring Mac Miller, where Mac Miller in his like giant sweater, which you know smells like farts and weed, is like hugging her, and he
looks, they make out pretty
they
like
make
pretty...
out. It is I can't believe anyone allowed that video to happen. Shame on you, Jones Crow. But this video, I thought this video kind of worked. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I disagree.
Sorry. Totally disagree.
Yeah, I also disagree.
Okay.
I mean, I think the main thing with a video like this is it's a really good example of why you should never let artists direct their own videos.
It felt, I don't want to be too hard on it, but yeah, no, I felt like the kind of fantasies I would have before going to bed when I was like a 10-year-old or something, you know? like I'm with the girl and then like the bad guys, but I have a sword.
I think it's just, I feel like it just reeks of somebody with a lot of money and power being like, I like Game of Thrones. Like, I want to do that thing, kind of, you know?
And Chris Brown definitely has a lot of money and power. He essentially directs all his music videos. We have 21 director credits for Chris Brown in the database. Some are not even his video. He directed a Kid Ink video. He directed an Asher Maroney video. He directs videos for other artists as well.
That's so interesting.
And they all, I mean, like, he also directs, you know, the massive hits, you know, Loyal and all the other ones that people sing on Vine. And he directs everything. And, you know, that's why you don't hear about how awesome those Chris Brown videos are.
But this is the first one that is like a concept video. Like, if you look at Loyal, it's your standard rap video.
Right. It's him dancing around and stealing women from people.
But this is him. I think this is him, like, kind of like making a turn and be like, I want to make like artistic video. I know it's not artistic, but and we should mention a show shot by Joseph Labisi, who is a fantastic DP, and I think he did a great job with this.
The lighting was impressive. Yeah,
yeah, and Labisi also collaborates frequently with Chris Brown. Shot Look at Me Now. It looks great.
I think there's shots that work.
I like the conceptual things, like Chris Brown not just like dancing around in a sweater. Like, I like that he's trying something interesting. I just think that it's still misses.
So you're like, it's good because he's not wearing a sweater.
Right, I'm cool with the sweater.
He's got a hood on at some point. It's from a dungeon. Yeah.
So he's wearing a different type of sweater.
Yeah. A different type of sweater. The kind of sweaters that like the cool kids wear who play The Sims are not They upset me that the way they wear their sweaters, and this, and Chris Brown wears it that way, and he does it in this.
I really don't like the shaky dance camera
shot. Yeah, it's like in a paint shaker at Home Depot or something.
I think that's, is that to hide something? I feel like it must be to hide something.
I think it's used to accentuate the moves, probably.
Yeah.
I think it, yeah.
Very well.
Because I never see that anywhere but his dance
fan
videos.
Channel.
What did you say? The Family Channel?
Yeah.
It's Disney. It's ABC Family now, first of all.
Yeah, the Disney Channel. Sorry, in Canada, it's Family Channel.
Oh, shit, right. You have stuff works differently up there.
Sorry.
It's cool.
But yeah, they would use that on those dance shows sometimes.
The camera shake. Cool.
So maybe we should talk about a good video. And Ali, you know, are you guys good on time for maybe like another 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, cool. And Doug, what you choose the one we talk about, because we got some choice ones here.
Yeah, I'd like to at least do two more. I'd like to start with Blindfold by 254, directed by Charlie Robbins and Chris Hugel. This is a super cool looking video. Adam Alexander would call it sexy, right, Adam Alexander?
Yes, and stylish.
It's sexy and stylish.
Yeah, it's so stylish. It's beautiful. It's really nicely shot. It's great. Also, the song is fantastic, and that helps usually.
This looks to me like it was shot on film. I don't really know. Owen, would you be able to back me up?
Yeah, I was gonna say 16. It looks like 16 to me.
Yeah, it looks super, it's like a little grainy a little bit. Is that the right word?
Yeah, it's definitely a bit grainy. Probably older film stock. But yeah, I put it down that this was on film for sure.
Nice.
Do you guys know where? Does anybody know where this was shot?
This looks like England to me.
Yeah, especially like this shot right here in the screen in the thumbnail of like this like circular.
The tunnel is so cool. Yeah,
it feels super English though, because it's like somewhere I've never seen.
So it must be
another jacket. Is epic though. That is an epic jacket. I'd wear that.
Yeah, her jacket's great. She's beautiful. The film quality is great. The song is good. It's a winner.
Yeah, and they're super good. There's like a live performance style stuff in here too that like fits in really well with this like super obviously like set up stylized like sunset in the background stuff. Like the stuff cut together really well.
This to me kind of gave me, and I don't. There's no like direct stylistic or like any other like physical line to it, but it gave me the same like vibe as the My Pay Don't Wait video. Was one of my favorite videos of the year, where you just get the sense like this, how do you say her name or the group's name? 254, I guess.
Yeah, right? Like the time. Yeah.
They're you know young. They obviously look. They have like fantastic camera presence. It's an early video of theirs, and they just kind of know how to control that part of their image. I think we're gonna. I would really like to see more work from them because they obviously know what they're doing in this area. Definitely like, you know, Charlie Robbins and Chris Hugel as well. But that, you know, we see so many videos a day and it's very rare when we see somebody with like really fantastic camera presence.
Yeah. It kind of really elegant.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel to it too.
Yeah, elegance is a super good way to describe it. I think the camera movement adds to that. Like the Steadicam that they use also kind of gives that feeling to it.
I think it's a really good quality when a director can see that, like, just shooting something straightforward of the artist is the right call. And I think this is a good example of that. And it feels like it's like little scenes from some movie that you don't know what the movie is about, but it's, you know, it feels like if you pull off any shot from it, like it could be like a movie trailer or something like that, like some like 70s French film or something like that.
All the settings, I think, definitely like in like sort of inhabit a mood and in their own right, and that's something that like is pretty cool. That it evokes like I really love this stuff. Is it? I'm gonna say dawn, but in the courtyard between the buildings. I think it's a great, like, half light kind of.
Yeah, they chose a really good time of day.
And I think that's something that's really unique to music videos. And Ali, I wonder if you found this as well in terms of, like, when you're writing a treatment or, you know, conceptualizing something. Like, music videos don't have that obligation to resolve anything, so you can just kind of like tell a fragment of a story or just show a fragment, and you, by the end, there's no like narrative wrap up that has to happen. You can just kind of invent something and just come in the middle of it and leave in the middle of it.
Yeah, totally. But it's nice sometimes to allude to something bigger. Or I mean, I think with each project it just depends, but there is, I feel like a video like this is a really good example. You have like this kind of snippet, this kind of little like snippet of life, you know, that it's like, you don't really walk away being like, what happened in that tunnel? You know, like, does she get eaten by a gorilla afterwards? It's like, you don't question it. And yet at the same time, it does feel like there's a story there and there's like some kind of like residual narrative or something.
Yeah, like even though it's not resolved, they're still linked to one another in some way, whether it's like thematically or emotionally or something like that.
Yeah,
you guys do that well in the Ejecta video, actually, is kind of like that too, where there's not really a narrative, but it feels like there is.
Right. Yeah. And I think when you are working with an artist, that you meet them in person and you're like, oh, I can see how this person's going to read on camera and it's going to be really special. Those are rare occasions where it's really, really nice to just like have the artist be the focal point, you know?
Well, I think we should talk, Doug, would you agree talking about the K-pop video would be good for a finale?
Yeah, definitely. This is an interesting one. Holler by Girls' Generation TTS, which is different than just regular Girls' Generation.
Could you explain that? Because I'm confused.
Okay, so Girls' Generation is like a massive girl group. There's like 10, 15 of them.
Yeah.
And Girls' Generation TTS is just three of those girls. I believe the T and the S correspond to their names. But I'm not sure because all the descriptions have characters I'm not familiar with. I fucking love this video, especially like the Batman style text that pops up on the screen. Like whoever was responsible for putting those English words together to put up on the screen is hilarious, intentionally or unintentionally. Because I love that.
I think I saw them live at South By 2 years ago. It was either them or it was something exactly like them. another K-pop band. It was five or six girls. But I have to say that in terms of like live performance, it was one of the most captivating and impressive things I've ever seen. Ooh. It made like the 12-year-old girl inside me like just, you know, like just like very, very excited. It felt like seeing the Spice Girls or something. But I feel like this video these K-pop people, they really know how to make something seem so perfectly composed. Like it's like so rigidly put together, and you can see like the rigor of like every single shot, the camera movement, the choreography, the like everything down to like their nails and the hair and makeup. Yeah. And that's what makes videos like this so incredibly impressive, is like just the attention to detail. I mean, nothing is off. There's no C-stand in the shot anywhere.
Wow. Yeah. It's also all of everything, you know? It's like gold flecked chocolate on top of a filet mignon. It's like it's just extreme. The color, the movement.
Yeah, it is really good. It makes me feel like we'll never do anything valuable in our lives as long as this exists to compare ourselves to.
they're hogging up all the value.
K-pop has kind of taken like a pop video in like a logical progression. Like it's almost like they picked up like where the 90s ended and they just made it like amazing and perfect. Whereas like in North America, we just like dropped booties and like got dumber and stuff. But we're not making videos like this here. The energy and like just everything about it is like how I wish pop videos all were.
It's true. And they're also not like I've for some reason watch a lot of Russian music videos, and the Russians just shamelessly just appropriate everything that they can think of. You know, they'll literally just make like a very like hip hop, like a straight up hip hop video with all blonde Russian people in it, or they'll, you know, they'll just take certain tropes of American videos and then just recreate them in their context. Whereas I feel like with K-pop, they do all that 90s stuff, but they really do add their own flair to it. Like, this really feels like a K-pop video. It doesn't just feel like a well-executed American video, you know?
For sure.
And they've really taken the mantle with the Dutch angles. They're really, yeah, they're really carrying that, which is something you and Dutch angles are kind of, for anybody who is familiar, are like, I don't know how you describe them. They're off kilter. And
Brother does that. Brother breaks them out pretty
sometimes,
frequently.
Yeah, but you don't see that in a lot of mainstream stuff, even in films anymore. I guess I don't really see that much. But that's really featured in this. I think that, and it's funny, I was having a conversation with someone who is going to be contributing to our blog soon, who will be writing on K-pop and J-pop music videos, and talking a little bit about how the reason why Psy broke into the U.S. market may be, and this is, you know, something, anyway, sorry, the reason why Psy may be broken into the U.S. market is that he's a single person, and, you know, the U.S. and kind of English market for music right now is very individual focused. I mean, if you look at the top 10 music videos of all time, except for LMFAO, who's a duo, it's all single people.
That's so fascinating.
And it is, and it reflects in the, you know, the Hot 100 and pretty much everywhere. It's really tough as a group, and especially if you're this group who have multiple offshoots of the group. It's tough to kind of break through and be successful in the U.S. So I'm not really sure if something like Girls' Generation is going to be able to do that, but they make great music videos.
That's so interesting, because it's just basically like reflective of like the individualistic capitalist society. It's so interesting. I've just never thought about that before. That's so cool.
And it goes beyond the top 10. It's basically like the whole top 40 music videos of all time. I think there's three bands total in here. One Republic, One Direction, and Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Oh, and LMFAO. So four bands. Two of them are just duos, and two actual bands, and they're boy bands, One Republic's not a boy band. Sorry.
Well, I think that and we'll link to that. So I wrote an article a few weeks ago called "Welcome to the New Age of Golden Age of Music Videos," based on a talk I did at Sprockets, and one of the kind of theses of that, or the ideas of that, is that we're living in, and this has a huge impact on music videos, in sort of a post, you know, like a single female artist era, you know, like the shift being in like 2006 to 2008, we saw like a giant amount of single female musical artists that we, in a volume we had never seen before, like Rihanna and Katy Perry and Lady Gaga, who are really savvy with music videos. And that's made a huge effect on the recording industry and the music video industry. So so that's why I think that the one K-pop artist to really like break through and be the most successful music video of all time in terms of views on YouTube is a single person.
But I wonder if it has something to do with relatability, because there's like, I feel like with Twitter and everything, you get so much closer to artists, and there's like this feeling like, you know, you can, they take a picture of themselves in their hotel room with their puppy, and 2 seconds later see it, and you feel like you're their friend, and you kind of feel like you could be them. I don't know. I just saw, I just went to go see Lorde 2 days ago. And it was so interesting, cause I haven't been to like a big show like that in a really long time. And the whole crowd was just populated with, you know, like 12 to 18 year old girls that, you know, you could tell are kind of like the slightly but comfortably weird girls, you know, that are like, that relate to Lorde. It was like a very particular crowd of like not quite outcasts like the way you would see at like a metal show as a teenager, yeah, but like just this kind of slightly weird, you know. And you could, and they, you know, were idolizing her and like singing all the lines and everything. And it just made me realize that like when we were young, there wasn't really that kind of like the way you feel like Lord is your friend, you know, and she's whatever she is, like 18 or 17. And you're 17 and like you have this idol that's like feels like so close to you.
That's true. We never had that.
I feel like that's kind of the ideal right now. And I wonder what, you know, maybe that's why, like when we were growing up, it was about NSYNC, or when I was growing up, NSYNC and the Spice Girls and these groups where it was like, oh, the fantasy is that you and your friends get together and start a band.
But even then, they reflected like different aspects of like a clique in school, or you know, like each one, everyone had a favorite that they related to more.
Right.
You know, like, oh, so-and-so, this was a smart one, or here's a sensitive one, or, you know. And so they kind of bunched them together to get more, like, you know, bang for their buck, or whatever it is. And they don't need that anymore.
But it's kind of scary, actually, if you, I mean, I'm sure you guys know more than I do, but, like, if you actually look into, like, how some of these K-pop bands come up and how they're, like, manufactured from a young age. It's, like it's, 40. Like, a little creepy. I feel like it's, like, bordering on Law & Order SVU or something.
Well, the area you're talking about, the NSYNC, living in South Florida, a lot of the, you know, all of those bands came out of Orlando, and a lot of them trickled down to South Florida. And I remember hearing about so many, you know, Ozone and
O-Town,
BB Mac, and all those guys. It was O-Town, not Ozone.
There was both.
Oh yeah, but, yeah. I think there was an Ozone.
Ozone is real. It's true.
Yeah, and we kind of had that thing going on for a little bit. Definitely not as like raised from a young age, and not so. I think. There wasn't such a process to it,
but they are like plucked from a place and put together.
But I don't think it happens anymore. You know, even like Ariana Grande, Ariana Grande is styled to look 16, but she's 22. But even like, you know, Lord, I think we have more authentic people. And you're right. Like when we were in high school and talking as, you know, like maybe late 20s. There was never anything like that. There wasn't anybody who were like, I could be that person's friend. It was like, oh my God, these people are so cool. Maybe one day I could be that cool as well.
I think a lot of that has to do with the way music is released now and gains popularity too. It's not all about big major record labels deciding who's pushed. They just, like, people can just kind of get noticed on their own now, like Lorde did.
Or Echosmith, which is a band that we had somebody come by the site who has contributed a little bit at the site, who was kind of a rabid Echosmith fan a few years ago, and it was constantly
like
talking.
Huge
Echosmith fan, and I was like, okay, Echosmith, I get it, you know, whatever. And now they just had to do it. They just did a second version of their, I think Cool Kids is like number 12 or something like that on the Hot 100.
Yeah. That's another one that they use on Vine. I want to mention there are 5 bands in the top 40. Yelvis the Fox, also top 25.
Yeah, I don't know if that counts.
I mean, it's in the we. It counts for us.
I think we did it.
Yeah, we did. We did. Booty knocked a couple of the videos that we wanted to talk about off the list. and you know, how could we know?
Yeah, and actually, thank you, whoever released Booty on time, really an hour before our podcast recording.
Right on time.
They did it just for you guys.
Yeah,
related. Like, yeah, for we got to get this in. Yeah. And Ali and Owen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. This is fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah. This is really fun.
And we also want to say a huge congratulations to Mr. Doug Klinger, who is headed into New York to start a new awesome job. At none other than Vimeo.
That's so true. Cool. You're not lying.
Doug is going to be, and IMVDB, of course, is still going strong. IMVDB is larger than just Doug and I at this point, luckily.
IMVDB belongs to everybody.
It belongs to everybody. That's always been sort of the idea of it from the start, is an open music database. The data is for everybody. So IMVDB, of course, will continue on in the exact same fashion we have been. This podcast will continue on. But that's awesome. Congratulations, Doug.
Yeah,
MVDB is super proud of you. Maybe not Adam Alexander, but
no, Adam doesn't give a shit. I told him, he's like, I don't care. I'm at Tim Hortons. But part of my job is watching music videos because I'm going to be watching. I watch videos for them. So, yeah.
Are you going to be staff picking?
That will be among the responsibilities that I have. Yeah. Staff, making staff picks.
That is
making
so staff cool.
Picks with the curation team. Nice. So look out. Look out for a flood of music videos in the staff picks. Thanks for listening.
And if you're in New York, just email me adam@mvb.com and I'll email you Doug's cell phone number. And you can
and my address. And you can come hang out on my couch.
Doug will buy you lunch. So that is it for this episode. We'll see you guys again next week. And thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Bye.